Welcome today to our interview series with Outstanding Professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Elizabeth Sutherland, a global expert where we will chat on strategy, enterprise architecture, transformation, and operations improvement. Elizabeth, you have this really remarkable background. You've done a lot. So thank you for coming in today and sharing your many deep experiences with our audience.
Thank you, Stephen. It's a pleasure and an honor to be here.
Now, Elizabeth, as I mentioned, you have this remarkable career. You've got so many successes. Now, if you can talk about maybe some of the milestones in your career and then useful best practices, lessons, and tips that you feel will help the audience.
Sure. Yeah, I would like to start with something that, as an industrial engineer, I think when I started to understand the trade-off between being efficient and being effective, that was a huge milestone in my career. I think that there are benefits to being efficient that we often overlook the trade-offs that come up when we're looking at effectiveness. And I would say that an example of this as being spending most of my time in healthcare would be that, like, increasing the throughput of an emergency room doesn't necessarily improve the outcome of the entire hospital. You're just moving the bottleneck. So having that, I guess, maturity as an industrial engineer and then a systems thinker to truly see the trade-off between being efficient and effective was very helpful, and I would advise anyone in systems or enterprise architecting to look at that. I think also from a broader standpoint, just taking a step back and looking at my career in general, it's important to fine-tune your strengths and improve upon your weaknesses to a point. So I think it makes sense to understand where you might be weak within your own aptitude in an area and also just in general. But I think that really fine-tuning your strengths and being an expert in an area is more important than trying to focus on your weaknesses and bring them up to a certain point. So I would say that hone in on your strengths as a person. For me, I believe that would be looking at having a systems view on things and understanding how properties emerge from a system that is greater than the sum of its parts, so a whole being greater than the sum of its parts. That's where I really like to focus. But there are some areas that I'm just not going to be an expert in. And so I would say that is, an area that I want to improve upon, but I'm going to focus in on fine-tuning my strengths. I also would like to say that over the past couple of years in consulting and while I was in my grad school program, the importance of mentorship and role models is extremely, I cannot overstate. They change. I've had different role models and I've had different sponsors and mentors throughout my career. But to have someone, and I do mean one person that I've been able to look to and say, that is my sponsor or that is my mentor that I can go to with questions or candid comments about what's going on is extremely important from a sponsorship perspective in getting to the levels in which in my career that I've wanted to attain, but also in a personal perspective is just sanity checking, making sure I'm understanding what's going on correctly, and then also being able to relate to someone on a more human level than corporate level.
So what are the top challenges you have faced and your solutions to those challenges that you feel will be beneficial to the audience?
Yeah, so I would say that, as I said, I've spent most of my career in healthcare, and that was actually a challenge. Getting into the healthcare consulting field was a challenge for me. I graduated from undergrad in 2008, which was a tough year, if many of you remember, and I was just happy to have an offer from Accenture, and that was not in healthcare where my goal was. My goal was to end up doing healthcare consulting. I ended up in retail consulting. The first thing I would offer is, the first thing I would say as my solution to that is I took the offer that I had. I was happy to have it. I was happy to use my degree, industrial engineering and retail optimization. And I learned a lot from it. And I was happy for the experience that I had there. But as soon as I had the opportunity to jump into healthcare, I took it. And I made that opportunity for myself by expanding my social capital, by networking as much as possible to expand that social capital. And then as soon as the opportunity came about, I took it. I didn't have the role that I wanted, but it was in healthcare, and it was taking a step in the right direction. So while something might seem that it's to be a step in the, maybe even a step backwards, but sideways, I guess, would be the right term, I would say go for it. And I've been doing it ever since with my venture towards my master's program and then also my current career of consulting. I would say that now that I am in the healthcare consulting field, another challenge is convincing those in the medical field that collecting data and performing analytics is valuable. I think there, in the field in general, there is a shift which is positive toward the idea of using IT and using information systems to better enable higher value care. However, not everyone's convinced of that, and I think that is it's a challenge that we're facing. One of the solutions that, a simple solution is to draw a parallel, make an example out of a parallel situation. So, for example, explaining to them how they might understand the ESPN statistics. It is interesting to see how immediately we know that this is the first time a quarterback has scored a touchdown when it's been 20 degrees outside from the 30-yard line. Those type of statistics are only available because we have statisticians collecting this information and analyzing it around the clock. And wouldn't it be fabulous if we were able to do this within healthcare to say, oh, this patient we're going to check out has the possibility of being readmitted within the next week if they don't take their medication, so let's give them a follow-up phone call. And then I would say that my final challenge, I think, and that this is just speaking to the women in the audience, I can't avoid that, is being a younger woman in my profession has been being taken seriously, I feel, is a challenge, and I have been able to overcome that by constantly making it a point to put in the extra time to be dependable and reliable and make my output also dependable and reliable. And while that may seem a little biased or unfair to say, I think that it's just it's something that occurs and I have to deal with daily, and so do many other women or younger people in my profession. And you'll be better for it. To put in that extra time in the beginning will be beneficial in the long run to you and your employer.
Now, I've been doing these interviews since the 1980s, and I know in interviewing really prominent, very successful women in the past, they've experienced overt bias, which then transformed into unconscious bias. Do you still see overt bias?
You know, I would have to say not, I wouldn't say it's overt bias. I would say that I feel it's necessary to put a little more effort into proving myself from the get-go. And that might be something that I have kept with me since my undergrad, where I was, 10 of 100 females, and then my master's program where I was 7 of 70. There is the idea that, you may have been unfairly given the opportunity based on your gender or your age or your experience or whatnot. And I think there's that feeling of wanting to prove to others that that wasn't the case. And I think that while I looked at that as a challenge from the beginning, I think it's made me, it's been beneficial to me over my career in that I have put in that extra time and I'm used to it. And now it's not just because of a bias, but because of that's just how I work. And that's what's been given me an advantage at certain times.
It's interesting you describing this journey that you're on. So I'm then sort of curious, what are your longer-term goals from a career and personal standpoint?
So I would say that I, at this point, love consulting. When I went back to get my master's, I wasn't sure if I would end up coming back to the field. But after about 2 months of being in my master's program, I had missed it greatly and knew that I would want to come back. At this point, my goal is to continue consulting and, rise up, carry out through my career and eventually make partner and contribute to the world of constant sharing of knowledge within an industry to better the industry itself, not just a specific company. And so I would say my goal is to continue with consulting and impact the world that way.
Elizabeth, you've got a great and very successful consulting career, and as a result, you've discovered some great lessons that you could share. So could you provide a useful lesson on corporate strategy?
Absolutely. I would say that it's important to not get caught up in what is the most current or sexy fad. Like, for example, right now, we're big data is something that I would consider to be the what's in. I think, you know, we've seen the same thing with digital marketing and the internet. Instead, I think that it's important for corporations and organizations to look for ways to leverage and perfect these trends to solve core business issues, as opposed to investing a lot of resources in these trends themselves. So not necessarily becoming an expert on big data, but how can you use big data to understand your consumers and provide them with higher value? So an example would be, you know, where is the most spend within healthcare? That's a very easy question, but we didn't have the answer for that a while ago. And so just understanding that and how we can use that information to better target our care that we're giving to the different segmented populations is extremely valuable. Now, would a healthcare company be able to leverage expertise in big data? Yes. But if you're truly a healthcare company, you would want to be able to use the big data as more of a tool than something that you're specifically known for being an expert in.
Now, what are some practical tips on enterprise information? And transformation, I should say.
Sure. For enterprise transformation, first and foremost, I think it is extremely important to consider all the stakeholders and then consider secondary stakeholders. As a consultant, this is an extremely important point, but I believe it resonates with any professional that strives to transform an enterprise. It is important to understand who is leading the transformation, who is involved, and who is affected. This goes along with understanding as much as possible about the current state, so from a qualitative and quantitative perspective. My experience in enterprise architecting has been not necessarily from a pure IT perspective, but also within a couple other views, and those would be from a strategy perspective, from an infrastructure, a process, service, or products, knowledge, information, and organizational standpoint. So to begin to transform an enterprise, it's very important to understand the current state of your enterprise from each of these perspectives. And like I said, in both a qualitative and quantitative way, as much as possible. And then when you know the current state, it's much easier to understand what you may want the future state to look like and what the pathways or possible ways to get to the end state are.
Elizabeth, you're one of the leading authorities in this area, so how can the audience implement analytic capability and enablement?
Thank you for that. But I would say that obviously thought needs to be put or given to the type and architecture of the information systems that are being installed. But what I think it is equally, if not more important, is the governance principles and at times specific processes that are instilled within an organization. So data governance and guiding principles around this governance, and then also processes that direct and empower those involved with the collecting, interpreting, reporting, and reacting to this data is extremely important. The direct benefits of analytics is to be an organization that can make data-driven decisions. But these decisions need to be supported by actions, and to truly drive change and capitalize on the value of analytics, people need to be empowered to not only make these decisions, but then request action within the organization, and then also be held accountable for these actions so that they are truly carried out to transform the enterprise or keep the enterprise going as it should day to day.
In addition, you're one of the noted experts in operations. So what are the most useful processes for operations improvement?
Thank you again. I would say that the basics, truly from industrial engineering standpoint and also many other standpoints, the process and value stream mapping, something I've recently been using is a hassle map, which maps out where a customer or consumer may come across different pain points within a process. So definitely the traditional tools. I would also say that something I value and I think really provides a lot of insight to the current state of processes and where they in operations and where they should be improved is through interviews. And when I want to specify through interviews within an organization, it is extremely important to spend time with at all levels within the organization. So looking at the perceived performance of operations from those performing the operations to those managing the operations to the executives, and then comparing the difference in the perception of, let's say, the maturity among these operations is very telling, not just regarding what improvement needs to take place, but also how the company is thinking strategically, how they think they're performing, and then how they actually are performing. And I think that developing tools that can allow you to easily capture insight from these interviews and then slice and dice them in ways that provide you the ability to look at them across the way that the organization views its operations is extremely valuable.
Now, in all the work that you do, and again, let's mine your expertise and share that with the audience, what are the most useful tools and resources that you use?
Yeah, I would say the most recent tools that I've been using, and I think you'll find this with most strategy assessments, strategic assessments, is the interviews. Truly understanding where an organization thinks it is versus where it might be, and the might be part, and also the understanding of what the rest of the competitors within the industry or might look like is something that consultants have the ability to do because they're able to benchmark many companies within an industry and then outside of an industry against each other. I also think that the hassle mapping, I know that the hassle mapping is a process or practice that is extremely important and also really communicative to the audience. My client is usually the audience, but in just saying, hey, we understand what the issues are at hand. And while we might not be mapping out a hassle map for our client, we might be mapping it out for their customer, it's very telling and eye-opening for them to see what sort of pain points their customers are experiencing and where they need to focus to improve their operations to provide higher value to their customers.
Now, just to make it easier for the audience, can you spell the last mapping tool that you talked about?
Oh, sure. Hassle mapping. It's H-A-S-S-L-E, like a hassle. And I hope I'm spelling that right, actually.
Okay, now you're also a international expert in enterprise architecture. So what do you see are the challenges with EA, that is enterprise architecture, and where has it failed?
Yeah, good question. I would say, as you can tell, my experience with enterprise architecting has been not purely based on IT. And I think that it took me about 25 years to get, I was 25 years old in my 26, my master's program, to truly understand the value that can be translated to other parts of an organization by understanding the principles of enterprise architecting. And while IT is a very important part of it, I also believe that there are ways to optimize corporations, organizations, enterprises, using these enterprise architecting tools. And so while this is, I guess, a soft answer around how enterprise architecting has failed, I think that its value hasn't been translated in other industries as well. Now, to be a little bit more to provide a little bit more scrutiny around just enterprise architecting in general, I think the where it might also have had some challenges is that it is truly hard to capture all of the elements of a current state. And while I don't necessarily know a solution for this, to understand the architecture of an enterprise and set it up for transformation, it's important to have as much information as possible. And I think that until we can really apply more quantitative values to each of these views that I had mentioned, like the infrastructure, the processes, the organization, it's hard to translate the value of knowing this information without making it a little bit more quantitative. And so I think that might be an area that can be improved upon within enterprise architecting. I don't think it's a failure that can't be fixed, but I think that it's a challenge.
You know, it's interesting. In your profile, you worked on a project with the U.S. military, or you wrote about it and did a bit of an analysis. Did they use enterprise architecture prior to that? And maybe you can profile, you know, how you got involved or how you determined what you did.
Yeah. So actually, the way I was introduced to using enterprise architecting approaches was through a class. I had taken the class, and again, this goes back to my healthcare, wanting to get involved in healthcare. My specific master's program is sort of choose your own adventure. You can it's a fabulous program. It's a system design and management program at MIT, and they allow professionals to choose how they focus their education while they're there. And one of the ways that you can choose how to do this is through your thesis. And so I wanted to do a healthcare-based thesis. And to be honest, there wasn't a whole lot of, there weren't a lot of other classmates that had been involved in healthcare systems design and management. And so what I did is I found the one girl, Andrea Polito, ahead of me, who was also a big healthcare advocate. And she connected me with Deborah Nightingale, who was teaching this course on enterprise architecting. And so I took the course. And so the reason she connected me with Deborah was because Deborah was also had a particular interest in healthcare, improving healthcare. And she leads the post-traumatic stress innovation project with the military through the Sociotechnical Systems Research Center at MIT. Sorry, that was sort of a mouthful, but the point of the story is, using social capital that I had discussed a little bit earlier, I made the connection to take a class that was being taught by Deborah Nightingale, which was enterprise architecting. And through the class, it just opened my eyes to a different approach for transforming an enterprise. As an industrial engineer, I was used to looking at what is the current state of the specific operation. How can we make this more efficient, do it faster, quicker, smarter, et cetera? But this really took a higher level view on not just an organization, but the entire enterprise and the different ways to analyze the current state to understand what the potential future states were. And so that is how I was introduced to enterprise architecting, through the course. And then I wanted to study under Deborah, and so I spoke with her about potential opportunities to write my thesis with her as my advisor, and she had told me about this opportunity. The overall relationship with the military or the military health system is a much bigger project than what I contributed than my thesis. But the need was to the end goal was to transform the entire military health system, where I came in was to help understand the current state of a very small portion of the health system, which was a Marine and Naval base in Camp Lejeune, and then try to create a framework using enterprise architecting tools that can set up for a larger transformation. So how can enterprise architecting be used to understand the current state of a subset of a very complex system so that when you eventually apply the transformation from a higher level, like in the military, from a policy executive standpoint, what sort of impact can you expect to see at the lower levels? And so I found that fascinating. I really enjoyed the research, but also the modeling and how to set up an enterprise using very qualitative data, turning it into a little bit of quantitative data, and creating this framework that is now being used to help model what future states of the military health system may be.
Now, how do you see enterprise architecture evolving, and what will it look like in 5 years?
So going back to the qualitative versus quantitative, I think that the more enterprise architecting is used in parallel with how the many industries become advanced in working with unstructured data will be extremely helpful. I would say that enterprise architecting in the next 5 years will become more quantitatively operational, if that makes sense, so that they're able to take a lot of the information that we gather around organization, information, knowledge, processes, and use it in a way that's a little more structured to predict or to model current state and then predict the changes of future state. I also think that this goes hand in hand with it being used as a tool for enterprise transformation more regularly and not just as principles to design the IT landscape for a corporation. But certainly that's important. But I also think that these translating the principles that are used to design the IT architecture for an organization can be translated to other parts of the organization, especially during transformation.
There's this organization that was founded a few years ago, the Federation of Enterprise Architecture Professional Organizations, or FEPO. Do you see the value of having such an organization?
Absolutely. I think that the field and associated tools and approaches associated with enterprise architecting have added immense value to many industries. And what we are learning more and more today is that this value is actually compounded by the fact that it is not limited by particular industries. Enterprise architecting lessons and best practices are many times easily transferable to between these industries. And as you can tell, my experience with enterprise architecting is not IT-based, but rather systems-focused. And I think that FEPO serves as a great foundation to highlight and share the value that enterprise architecting can offer to industries from the perspective of IT, from the perspective of processes, from strategy, from an entire enterprise transformation tool through its diverse channels and connections.
Now, you do a lot of work. You travel. You work with many different sort of clients, and you've, as I mentioned earlier, are a noted expert in this area. So there must be areas of controversy. Are there any areas that you wish to talk about?
Yeah. Well, I work in healthcare, and right now in the United States, healthcare is and I wouldn't just single it out to the United States, but there are particular controversies that surround the healthcare industry in the United States. One is that of legislation. Is it constitutionally sound? What's going on? The other is just how are we going to fix the healthcare, regardless of legislation. Spending 18% of GDP on our healthcare costs is really not acceptable. With many people not receiving the healthcare treatment that they need. More so than a controversy, I would say there's a challenge in how to effectively transform the industry from fee-for-service to a fee-for-value standpoint. So how can we incentivize all the players in the industry from the insurers to the providers like the doctors, the hospitals, and also the pharmaceutical companies to perform operations not necessarily on a, when I say fee-for-service, I mean repetitive treatment operation, but fee-for-value. So every time they see a patient, their goal is to not see them again. That's a challenge, and the way to approach that is definitely controversial. I think that the industry has come a long way, and I think that enterprise architecting is definitely a tool set that I use to help myself understand the different relationships between all of the players, from as high level of pharma insurers and providers to the relationships within specific hospital systems. I think that I would also like to say that for practical examples of the system thinking being carried out in healthcare, the Oliver Wyman Healthcare Innovation Center has some great examples there, and I can send you the link for that.
Yeah, having the link attached to the interview, I think, would be a great asset to the audience. So thank you for that. Now, how do you see the evolution of EA, that is enterprise architecture, as a recognized profession on par with accounting, medicine, law, engineering, with demonstrated professional development, adherence to code of ethics, personal responsibility, public accountability, quality assurance, and recognized credentials?
Yeah. So I think that from an IT perspective, I don't think enterprise architecting is far off from having similar recognition. However, from a systems and, I guess, corporate transformation perspective, I think we have a long way to go before systems thinking that can be demonstrated and I think also articulated through the idea of architecting an enterprise still needs to be, the value needs to be demonstrated and disseminated, and really the story needs to be told in a larger way. And so I think from a non-IT perspective, we have a ways to go before we get to the recognized profession, but we're making strides.
Now, Elizabeth, you do travel, you speak, you work in various domains. Perhaps there's some stories you can share that the audience may find amusing, surprising, unexpected, or amazing?
Sure. So through, I travel 80% around Monday through Thursday. I'm in a different city. Currently living in New York City is always an interesting, always makes for an interesting weekend time. I would say that something that I've learned as a consultant is to have a lot of faith in pilots. They know what they're doing, and while there might be some bad rap going around, I think that I've had a lot of interesting experience through my flight, where I do spend most of my time doing work that I can recall. And I know this is a little not necessarily professional, but I think when I heard the question, I immediately my mind went to when I was on an airline. I fell asleep overnight. It was a red-eye flight, and I wake up, and the flight is just nosediving. And I thought for a second, oh, man, this is it. But no one around me looked calm, so I figured something was going on. And, you know, I found out that someone was actually having a heart attack, and the pilot, happened to be right over Kansas City, and the pilot was, you know, the only way to get him down fast enough was to just really go directly straight down. And through that experience, I learned that, you know, these pilots flying back and forth is cake from one state to the next. They're really trained to do a lot. So that is one of my most, I would say, interesting experiences in my life from not necessarily a work perspective. I'd also say that my husband and I have made the decision to spend a lot of time traveling over the next couple of years when we can. We don't have kids yet, and I have really enjoyed spending time with my husband and traveling to different parts of the world, and I would recommend that to anyone if you have the opportunity to work abroad, live abroad, just go for a weekend to Barcelona because there's a company trip there, do it. It has really changed the way that I see the world, and then also sharing that experience with someone I love has been amazing.
Now, Elizabeth, we're down to our last question, and it's sort of an open-ended one in the sense that I'm turning the tables and that you're kind of interviewing yourself. So if you were conducting the interview, what questions would you ask, and then what would be your answers?
Oh, yeah, this is interesting. So I think that going back to where I looked at some of the challenges within enterprise architecting, I think that it would be good to hear what industries are currently benefiting most from enterprise architecting. And my answer would be most. I think that in a segmented way, the processes that are used and the best practices being used to install, to make decisions about the information systems and how they're going to be used within an organization is a true game changer as far as how IT has changed the touched all industries. But then from the flip side, I think that these industries could benefit more from applying many of the principles of enterprise architecting outside of the information systems realm. And so then my next question would be, which industries have the potential to benefit more from enterprise architecting? And I think my answer to this question would also, again, be most, but particularly honing in on industries with a lot of stakeholders from that have very, almost you would think, siloed holds of the market. So I go back to healthcare, my pet industry, with the insurance companies, providers, and pharmaceutical companies. These may seem like they are not very connected and almost siloed parts of one large industry. But as we're seeing now, moving more toward a fee-for-value type of healthcare system, the relationships between the healthcare providers and the insurers at this point are increasing exponentially, as well as how they're interacting with the pharmaceutical companies. And I think that applying the systems thinking principles that are enabled through enterprise architecting is truly beneficial for healthcare. And so I would say that I would really like to end on the idea that, or a question for the audience is just, you know, how can the value of enterprise architecting be demonstrated and communicated to leaders in all of these industries, not just healthcare, but I think it's a lot, there's a lot of untapped value that needs to be highlighted. And I think FIPO is an organization that's striving to do this, and I'm happy to be a part of that. But I think that we have a long way to go before we can tap the value offered by enterprise architecting.
Elizabeth, you are a much-in-demand international expert, and I know you're really, really busy. So we are indeed fortunate to have you come in to do this interview. And again, thank you for sharing your many deep experiences with our audience.
Thank you. It's truly been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed speaking with you, and your questions were very thought-provoking. So I really had a great time. Thanks a lot.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Elizabeth Sutherland, a global expert where we chatted on strategy, enterprise architecture, transformation, and operations improvement.